This show was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kanepes, Hawke's Bay's community access radio station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for enabling us to put Hawke's Bay voices on air. Chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang. Oh, you pretty chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, we love you and him. Chitty chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang. When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along. Wake up, you sleepy head. Get up, get out of bed.
Well, hello! I didn't see you coming in there. This is Dexter. Welcome to Kidnappers Kids. It's a wonderful day. I've got a few stories for you. And let's shoot right into the tortoise, the tortoise, and the hare.
This is the story of the tortoise and the hare, and the remarkable race that they had. Now, as I'm sure you all know, the tortoise is a slow-moving sort of a chap who carries his house on his back wherever he goes and munches his way through lettuce leaves and the odd juicy carrot. This particular tortoise was no different. He was very friendly and did things at his own pace. He never saw the point in rushing. He thought that there were too many woodland creatures running around at breakneck speed as it was. They never managed to stop and look at a sunset or consider a nice juicy cos lettuce, and that, as far as the tortoise was concerned, was their loss. He would always have time to admire the dew on the meadow or the first summer flowers, and he always had time to stop and chat with whoever he met. I've already mentioned that he was a very friendly tortoise, and he was. He liked everybody, and everybody liked him. The hare was a completely different proposition altogether. He didn't have a big shell to carry about with him. In fact, he didn't have to carry anything at all, which is just as well, as at the speeds the hare travelled, anything he did carry was sure to end up looking rather dishevelled. Although he too was very friendly, he never had time to stop for more than a "how do you do" before he was off again. Always very, very busy. Always on the move. There weren't enough hours in the day for the hare, and he often laughed at the way the others went about their daily business, especially the tortoise.
"Oh, come on, slow coach, move along if you please. Some of us have got work to do. What are you doing anyway? The rate you're going, it'll be lunchtime by the time you finish breakfast."
"No, it won't," replied the tortoise. But the hare couldn't hear him because, still laughing at the top of his voice, he'd already dashed off on another very important errand. "Anyway," thought the tortoise as he finished the last of his breakfast, "gulping your food down gives you tummy ache. Everyone knows that." And he was still thinking about this when the hare zoomed past in the opposite direction.
"Still at it, slow coach? I'd love to stay and chat, but I'm late for an important appointment, so I've got to run. See you later."
And he disappeared over the horizon in a cloud of dust. Now, one day, the tortoise and the hare ran into each other in the road. Well, when I say ran into each other, it'll be obvious to anyone who's been listening carefully to the story that it was most likely the hare doing the running and the tortoise plodding along in his own contented way. But you couldn't say they plodded into each other, could you? So for now, let's just say they met.
"What are you doing here?"
asked the hare, who, quite apart from always being in a hurry, always wanted to know what other people were up to. "Me? Oh, I'm just listening to the birds singing," replied the tortoise. "I was hoping I might be able to hear the first cuckoo of spring. I'm especially fond of cuckoos." And with that, the tortoise lifted his head up, cleared his throat, and did a very passable imitation of a cuckoo.
"Cuckoo! Cuckoo! You'll cuckoo if you ask me," scoffed the hare. "Sitting around listening to birds, I don't know. What a boring life you must lead. How on earth do you ever get anything done?"
"I plan ahead," said the tortoise, as though the answer was obvious. "That way I can make sure I get everything done and don't waste my time."
"Well, you're wasting mine," said the hare rudely. "You carry on with your cuckoo. Some of us have got things to do."
And with that, he hopped over a fence and sped away across the field. The tortoise smiled. He was not smiling at the hare. He was smiling because from deep in the wood came the unmistakable sound of the first cuckoo of spring.
"Cuckoo! Cuckoo!"
"Ah," thought the tortoise. "Good. Now spring has officially begun. I wonder how my lettuces are coming on." And spurred on by the thought of a nice crisp lettuce leaf, the tortoise made his way back to his garden. He was relaxing in the shade after a hearty lunch of lettuce leaves and carrot tops when the hare came zooming up and stopped in front of him.
You still lying around listening to birds?
Oh, no, replied the tortoise. I'm digesting my lunch. Then I think I might take a little nap.
A nap? Laughed the hare. You haven't done anything to make you tired yet. I could do 100 things in the time it takes you to cross the road. Nap, indeed.
Is that so? Retorted the tortoise, who was beginning to get a little bit cross with the hare's high and mighty ways. Well, let me tell you, I can be pretty fast myself when I want to.
Oh, really? Said the hare. Yeah, with that streamlined shell of yours, you must be a positive blur when you whiz past on the way to the cabbage patch. A veritable whirl of activity.
I get by, sniffed the tortoise.
All right, then, said the hare. I challenge you to a race.
A what? Asked the tortoise, his eyes wide with surprise.
You heard me, smirked the hare. A race to see who's fastest.
You're challenging me to a race? The tortoise finally managed to get out.
That's right. You say you're pretty fast when you want to be. So how about it? Or are you a chicken?
No, I'm a tortoise. Oh, I see what you mean, said the tortoise, blushing under his shell. All right, a race it is. Just make sure you turn up.
Don't worry, I will.
And the hare whizzed off once more, leaving the tortoise to wonder what he'd got himself into. The date was set for the big race, and all the woodland creatures gathered at the start with great excitement, a lot of which was caused by the hare himself, who was doing backflips and somersaults and generally showing off to the crowd, who were loving every minute of it, though not perhaps as much as the hare himself. He just loved being the centre of attention and went around greeting the crowd as though he'd already won.
Hello there, nice to see you. Glad you could come and see me win. Autographs later, if you don't mind. Could somebody make sure the trophy's ready for me? Just give it a good polish, there's a good chap.
The tortoise could hardly believe he was actually going to race the hare, but managed to retain his dignity and wished the hare well.
Good luck, hare. I'll do my best to give you a good race.
Good luck, sneered the hare. You'll need good luck if you're going to reach the finish line before next Tuesday.
Are you both ready?
Inquired the badger, who had the job of starting the race.
Yes!
Shouted the tortoise and hare together.
Right!
Said the badger.
On your marks, get set, go!
And they were off. The hare was soon so far ahead that he couldn't resist showing off some of his favourite moves to the crowds that lined the route.
I'm the greatest!
He boasted, and he put on a spurt of speed that churned up dust and pebbles and sent a group of young otters running for cover. The hare then looked back down the lane for the tortoise, who was nowhere in sight.
It'll be ages yet, thought the hare, and I'm starting to feel a little hungry.
He'd been in such a hurry getting ready for the race and showing off to the crowds that he hadn't had any breakfast.
Well, he said to himself, no time like the present, and I know a spot not far from here with some delicious turnips.
And having made up his mind, the hare bounded across a ditch, hopped over a hedge and went in search of breakfast. After a third helping of turnip, he started to feel tired. He didn't know that eating can often make you feel tired, especially if you skip breakfast. And on reaching the lane once more, decided he was so far ahead, he could afford a little rest. And in no time at all, he was fast asleep. The tortoise was very surprised to find the hare still asleep some time later. Poor hare, he thought. All that rushing around must have tired him out. I'm not surprised. I get tired just watching him. And with that, the tortoise walked past the sleeping hare as quietly as he could. Shh, he whispered to a group of young otters who were pointing at the sleeping hare and giggling. He's asleep. Don't wake him up now. And the tortoise went on his way. The hare woke up some time later with a nagging feeling he'd forgotten something.
Oh, what was it? He said to himself. I'm supposed to be doing something, but I can't remember what it was.
And just then he looked up the lane and saw far away in the distance the tortoise approaching the finish line.
Oh, no, wailed the hare. The race! Oh, I've got to catch him, he gasped, and ran at his absolute top speed, ears flying in the wind. I've just got to!
But it was too late. By the time he got there, the tortoise had already won, and the crowd cheered and Badger awarded the tortoise with the trophy, which had been well polished, just as the hare had asked. Never mind, hare, said the tortoise. Good race anyway. No hard feelings?
Oh, well, grumbled the hare, who still couldn't quite believe he'd lost. No, I suppose not. Well done, tortoise.
And everybody cheered as loudly as they could.
I hope you're having a fantastic day on this. Ooh, it's getting into winter and it's getting a bit chilly. So a few stories is just something marvellous to sit back, have a nice warm drink, relax. And here we have the Frog Prince.
Ribbit.
Once upon a time, there lived a beautiful princess. Her father, the king, was very rich, and they lived together in an enormous castle standing in the most beautiful gardens you've ever seen. In these gardens, there was a very old well, and sometimes the princess used to go and play by the well with her most prized possession, a beautiful golden ball which her father had given to her on her 16th birthday. Now one day, as she was playing by the well, she threw the golden ball high into the air, and when it came down, it fell out of sight, deep into the well.
Oh! Oh! Oh, dear! What has happened to my lovely golden ball? It has disappeared into the well. What can I do? Oh, what can I do? It is so deep and dark down there, I can't see it. Oh, dear! Oh, dear! Oh!
Why do you cry, princess?
Oh!
You sound as though you are in great trouble.
Who is that?
Don't be afraid. I will not hurt you. I am just a frog who lives in this well. If you tell me why you are crying, I will try and help you.
Well, I was playing here with my beautiful golden ball, which was a present from my dear father and my most treasured possession. And I threw it too high into the air, and it has fallen deep, deep into the well. And I cannot see it, and I don't know how I'm going to get it back again. And I am so unhappy.
Don't cry, princess. I will dive into the water in the well and rescue your golden ball for you. But what will you give me in return?
Oh, anything, dear frog. Anything you ask for. I will give you my richest jewels, even this crown on my head. Only ask and you shall have it.
I do not want any of these things, princess. All I ask is that you promise to love me. Take me home with you and let me eat at your table and sleep in your bed.
Oh, yes, anything, anything.
Then promise me.
I promise.
Then I will go down to the bottom of the well and fetch your golden ball.
Can you see it, dear frog? Can you see it?
Yes. If you be patient. Here, princess. Here is your golden ball.
Oh, thank you. My beautiful golden ball. I will never play near this well again. Goodbye, frog, and thank you.
Wait. You promised to love me and take me with you. Don't run so fast, I cannot keep up with you. Wait.
But the princess was so delighted at having her golden ball back again that she forgot all about her promise to the frog and ran happily back to the castle. The poor little frog followed as fast as he could, but by the time he arrived at the castle, they were serving dinner. The princess was the first to see the ugly little frog arrive, and she ran to the door and tried to shut it out. But the king, seeing her act so strangely, said,
"What are you doing, my dear? Why did you leave the table so suddenly and rush to the door?"
"It's nothing, father, nothing."
"What do you mean, nothing? Is someone there?"
"No. No one."
"Then why are you so agitated and why do you look so pale? You are not telling me the truth, I fear. Who was at the door?"
"I tell you there was no one. Only a horrible old frog. I lost my golden ball in the well when I was playing this morning, and the frog found it for me and made me promise to let him eat at my table and sleep in my bed as a reward. But I cannot do it. It is quite ridiculous."
"Then you should not have promised in the first place. If you have given your word, then you must keep it. A promise is a promise, and must always be kept, no matter how you feel about it. Now go and open the door and fetch the frog in to sit at the table with us.
But I can't have a horrible frog eating at my table.
Then you should not have promised. Now go and get the frog at once.
Oh! Oh!
And the princess went over to the door and let the poor little frog in. He jumped hippity-hop across the floor and onto the table beside her plate.
Dear princess, may I eat from your golden plate?
No, no, no.
But you promised.
If you promised, my dear, your promise must be kept.
Oh, how hateful. Here, take the food off my plate, but I cannot eat any more.
So the frog ate from the princess's golden plate, and when he'd finished, he said,
Now, dear princess, take me upstairs and I will share your bed.
No, no, no.
But you promised.
If you promised, my dear, then your promise must be kept.
So the princess picked up the wet, slimy frog and carried him upstairs to her bedchamber.
Now put me into your little bed.
No, no, no.
But you promised.
I don't care what I promised. I won't do it. I won't, I won't, I won't. So there.
And she threw the frog into a corner of the room and flung herself onto her bed, sobbing violently. The little frog jumped hippity-hop across the bedroom floor and pulled himself up onto the bed.
Oh, 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 what's that? Oh, have you dared to climb up onto my bed by yourself, you nasty, nasty frog? Go away, go away!
And with that, she picked up the poor little frog by his back legs and threw him across the room at the wall. As the frog hit the wall, the most amazing thing happened. He changed instantly into a tall, handsome prince.
Oh! Oh! What is happening? Where have you come from?
Dear princess, many years ago a wicked witch changed me into a frog and said the spell would never be broken until a beautiful princess took me home with her and let me eat from her table and sleep in her bed. Because your father made you keep your promise to me, the spell has been broken, and I am a prince again. Will you marry me, dear princess, and I will take you back to my kingdom with me?
Oh, yes, yes. I am so sorry I was so horrid, and I will always keep my promises in future.
And she did. And after they were married, a beautiful golden carriage with 6 prancing horses drove the frog prince and his bride back to his kingdom, where they lived happily ever after.
Here we are on Radio Kidnappers, Kidnappers Kids, Radio Kidnappers, being the voice of Hawke's Bay. It's a wonderful place, both the bay and kidnappers. Yes, indeed. Another story. Indeed, another story. Yes. Gulliver and Lilliput. That's a good one.
It all began one dark November morning. From my earliest youth, I had been interested in travel, and shortly after I'd finished my studies, I took a post as doctor on the Antelope, a fine ship in His Gracious Majesty's service, which was about to set sail for the South Seas. Just after we left Talalang, a little port where we'd taken on a cargo of spices, we came into the terrible zone of the winds, and very soon we were rolling in high seas, lashed by a furious wind.
We only needed this fog to make us feel at home. It's as bad as London.
Hurry! To starboard!
Cursed wind's going to throw us straight under that reef.
We'll have to try and get around it somehow. All hands on deck!
All hands on deck!
All in the mainsail!
All in the mainsail!
All in the topsail!
All in the topsail!
Hard to port!
Captain, the mizzen mast is down!
Captain, the hull's full of water!
Oh, lower the boats!
Lower the boats!
Quick there, pour oil on the sea! Our only hope.
I'll never get out of this. I'm exhausted. The ship turned over on us. My friend's gone down. Come on, Gulliver. Don't lose heart like that. You're a powerful swimmer and the shore's not so far off now. I've touched bottom. I'm saved. Oh, what a lovely little beach. There's not a house to be seen. Nobody on the shores. But it doesn't matter. I'm tired out. Oh, sleep. Sleep. I'll lie down here. This soft grass.
Pekina de Gull.
Pekina de Gull.
Pekina de Gull. Tanaki Kalogan.
Without knowing it, I had come ashore on the land of Lilliput, a tiny little kingdom where the men are no more than a few inches tall. Later, when I had learned this people's language, I found out just how astonished everyone had been when I made my sudden arrival.
Father, Father, look over there. A mountain has come out of the sea during the night.
Oh, a mountain. Great heavens, what will we do with a mountain like that in our little kingdom?
Father Crookton! Father Crookton!
Yes, dear?
I've just walked right round the mountain. Right round.
Right round?
Oh, it was a long walk. There's something very funny about it.
Funny?
It looks a bit like us. And every now and then, it moves.
Moves? Oh, quite extraordinary. What sort of animal do you think it could be?
Well, I've sent for Professor Akatanois. He's sure to know. Oh. Here he comes. Here he comes.
Here he comes.
Let me see, let me see, let me see. What's this strange thing that's been discovered?
Oh. But it's very high.
Well, at first glance, I'd even state that it's a very... interesting, yes, a very interesting discovery. You are in the presence of a species which is rapidly becoming extinct. This species is known as man. You all know that in our language man means a degenerate being. Notice the various stages of this degeneration. The limbs have become fat and long. The head is far too big for the small brain it contains. Yes, these creatures who used to exist thousands of years ago left the Earth to go to the moon. This must be a fossil which has been preserved by accident and thrown up on our shore by last night's storm.
Oh. Professor, it's moving.
My friends... if this creature's alive, you must watch out for the most terrible catastrophes. They're a terrible race. You must fix him to the ground quickly before he wakes up.
Haul in that rope there. A little more over here.
Give me a little bit of that rope, please. Please, now heave.
Of course, I heard nothing at all of these Lilliputian goings-on, as I was in a deep sleep, and in any case, I didn't understand the language at the time. When I awoke, I found myself trussed up like a turkey and firmly fixed to the ground.
Come, let me see. I'm tied down, but I don't suppose these bonds are very secure. I'll just pull with my right hand and see what happens. Oh, there must be 1,000 little arrows sticking into me. Horrible little men. Oh, my hand's hurting me as if I'd been stung by a viper. Well, it's lucky that I kept on my leather jerkin. The best thing for me to do is to lie still. That's better. Things have calmed down a bit, but there's still a lot of movement over there. Oh, I see. They're sending one of their men over. He's on a little tower on wheels. He's just on a level with my eyes. He's wearing a crown. He must be the king.
Langro de Hulsang.
What's he saying? I'll try and reply. Langro de Hulsang, your highness. Your highness seemed to shock him. I'd better try something else. Your lowliness, Langro de Hul. I don't know what on earth to say to the little man. He seems to be annoyed at everything I say. All right, I'll try to be humble. Your illustrious majesty, I am your servant, your most lowly servant. All right, I agree, your majesty, but I haven't had anything to eat for 24 hours. How on earth am I going to explain that to him? I'll have to show him with my hands, that's all. Hungry. Eat. Yum. Eat. He seems to have understood. He's getting down from his little tower now. And he's giving orders. He certainly seemed to be having some effect. From what I heard later, my first meal in Lilliput was something that the people will never forget.
His Majesty has given orders that a meal should be taken to the prisoner Man Mountain. Would you be kind enough to make the necessary arrangements?
Very well, Your Highness. What am I to do? Lord High Officer of His Majesty's Footmen, would you be kind enough to tell the Lord High Officer of the Mouth what His Majesty has requested?
Feed that monster. It's impossible. There's only one thing for me to do. That's to ask the help of His Majesty's Lord High Officer of the Kitchen.
Yes. I heard your instructions, Your Highness. I have to give all the food from the Royal Kitchen to the Man Mountain. I have spent 22 years in this honorable calling, and it's the first time I've been asked to undertake such a lowly task. A task unworthy of the illustrious art of the mouth.
Now, don't be angry and don't let us down. You're the only person who is capable of taking on such a responsibility.
Very well. I agree, Your Highness. But you must leave me free to do exactly as I wish.
Your request is granted. We leave it entirely to you to get us out of our difficult situation.
In that case, members of the kitchen staff, go to your ovens, and may every able-bodied person in this kingdom help us in this task.
Look, Grandma, they've put some ladders against his shoulder, and there's a chain of people bringing the baskets of food.
Do you know that's the 500th leg of lamb he's eating?
Oh, it's not possible. How can you feed such a monster?
Be careful there, for heaven's sake, don't spill the kidney beans. Oh, the monster's thirsty. But bring up more barrels of wine.
One, two, three, four, five. Oh, what a throat he's got. I'm sure he could swallow the sea.
Let me see. 500 legs of lamb at 3 anapa each. That makes 1,500 anapa. One cartload of lettuce, 60 anapa. 120 small loaves, 40 anapa. 5 barrels of wine, 900 anapa. So altogether we have 1,500, 1,560, 1,600, 2,500. 2,500 anapa?
Oh, I must have made a mistake. 3,500. No, no, I was right. 2,500 in Arpa. Great Tabhau. This man's a bottomless pit. He's going to ruin us. Oh, we must hold a state council right away.
Well, Lord Chamberlain, have my orders been carried out?
Yes, Your Majesty, we have poured a sleeping draught into the prisoner's wine.
Good. Is he firmly fixed now?
Oh, yes, Your Majesty. The master blacksmiths in the capital have made 91 chains, and they fix these to the prisoner's legs. The chains are held by 36 locks each.
Excellent. Members of the council, you have been in session since this morning to decide on the necessary measures concerning our prisoner. I would be glad to hear what you propose.
Your Majesty, we regret to tell you that we can't come to any agreement on this matter.
No, Your Majesty, cannot.
Very well, we'll have to hear from each of you. In turn, Lord High Admiral.
Your Majesty, I have no doubt in my mind of what must be done to this animal, no doubt at all. He must be driven out of the kingdom as soon as possible.
In other words, you're going to leave him free to come back again and destroy the whole of Lilliput.
But we can't feed him. Ooh. You've heard the evidence of the Lord High Officer of the Mouth. We are heading for famine. Famine, gentlemen, I tell you.
Well, there's no problem then. We let him die of starvation.
Oh, I've got a better idea. Let's fire poisoned arrows at him. It's much quicker that way.
But we are getting...
Gentlemen, order, please. What if we do let him die? Professor.
Your Majesty, I must draw your attention to the dangers... the dangers that such a solution involves. Such a big corpse could be very embarrassing, and we couldn't bury it, and the risk of disease would be very great.
Let's throw him into the sea.
You know perfectly well that the tide would simply bring him back again.
Well, that's what you say.
Well, the situation seems very difficult.
Your Majesty...
What is it, Lord High Chamberlain?
The officer who is in charge of the guard set over the man. And Mountain wants to make his report.
Let him come forward.
Your Majesty, I have news for you. Almost incredible news. It really seems as though this man Mountain has a heart, just like we Lilliputians have. Huh? It is moved by feelings of goodness.
Really?
Yes, Your Majesty. As soon as the news of his arrival had spread round the country, a large crowd of Lilliputians came to see him. In spite of all my guards, a number of foolhardy men managed to climb right up on his nose. Oh, Your Majesty, you should have seen the way his enormous hands came down to pick them up, five at a time. The crowd screamed with horror, and my soldiers were on the point of charging to come to the rescue of our unfortunate countrymen. When we saw the man Mountain bring them close up to his face, look at them carefully, then put them on the ground, gently.
Oh, this is most interesting. So he didn't do those fools any harm at all. He didn't even squeeze them a little between his fingers.
Oh, no, Your Majesty. The whole crowd can witness to that.
You see, then, members of the council, that this is no monster we have to deal with, and it would be unworthy of our Lilliputian hospitality to allow any harm to come to him.
But, Your Majesty... The problem of food still remains.
This problem can very easily be solved on a national cooperative basis. Every morning, each village will bring 6 cows and 40 sheep to the royal kitchens. They will also bring bread and wine. The royal treasury will see to any other expenses. One of the first things to see to is that our gates should be closed in the style of our country. 300 tailors must start the task of making him a suit straight away. In addition, 6 of our best teachers must instruct him in our language. Later, I shall talk to the Man Mountain myself. Gentlemen, the meeting is closed.
Oh, yes.
give me my liberty.
You'll have to wait for that. You've got to earn our confidence first, and don't get angry when I give the order for you to be searched. You might have dangerous weapons on you.
All right. I'll pick up the officers myself. Here they are. Now, I'll put them in my pockets. Gentlemen, make yourselves at home. Search as much as you like.
I can see a large number of curious objects.
So can I. There's a big box here. I'd like to open it. Oh, curse it!
What happened to you?
You oughtn't to have opened my snuff box.
I'm putting that horrible powder in his nose. However, let's continue. Here are some huge metal wheels with the heads of men and women engraved on them.
Those are my coins.
I'm in difficulties. I'm all caught up in an enormous stretch of cloth, big enough to serve as a carpet in His Majesty's banquet hall.
Oh, that must be my handkerchief.
Something else for his nose. He's very careful about his nose, isn't he?
Look at this. This is a most peculiar machine.
Put your ear close to it. Can you hear it go tick-tock, tick-tock?
It makes as much noise as a watermill.
That's my oracle. I rarely do anything without consulting it.
It must be the god he worships.
Have you finished going through his pockets yet? Yes, Your Majesty. But if we have to draw up an inventory of all these objects...
Put it all on the ground. Prisoner, we shall have to take your sword.
As you wish, Your Majesty. I'll just whirl it around my head a little so that you can hear the sound it makes.
Gentlemen, remember your dignity. Prisoner, do you mind telling me what those huge hollow metal columns are that are hanging by your side?
I will show you, of course, Your Majesty. Everybody's lying flat on the ground. Even the king doesn't seem able to overcome his emotion.
Oh, that's the most terrible device. Hand it over straight away. Let it be taken away to the deepest cellars of the palace. Guards, let two of the strongest of you take a pole on your shoulders and take away the tick-tock machine to the palace. It will amuse the queen and the ladies of the court.
I remained a prisoner for a fairly long time. I did my best to be as nice as possible to the little creatures who came in greater numbers daily to watch my habits. My good behavior was appreciated by everyone, and little by little they became used to me. Sometimes I used to lie down on the ground and let five or six of them dance on my hand. And finally, the little boys and girls just used to play hide-and-seek in my hair. One day, the Admiral, Suresh Bolgolam, who seemed proud to be my mortal enemy, came to see me.
You are going to be set at liberty, but there are certain conditions that you must obey. Let me read you what His Majesty has decided. First condition. The Man Mountain must not leave the kingdom without our permission. Second condition. He must not walk anywhere save on the main roads. He must not lie down in our meadows or our fields. Third condition, he must be very careful not to walk upon the citizens of Lilliput, nor upon their horses, nor their carts. He must not pick anybody up without permission. Fourth condition, he must be our ally against our enemies from Blefuscu, and he must do everything in his power to wipe out their fleet, which is being prepared at the moment to destroy us.
I accept these conditions.
Very well. Now, hold your right foot in your left hand, put the middle finger of your right hand on the top of your head, and your thumb on the tip of your right ear, and swear.
There. I swear to respect these conditions.
Let the prisoner be freed.
And since I'm now freed, I should like very much to visit the capital of your kingdom.
His Majesty is ready to grant your request. But wait until I have made certain arrangements. Guards, put warning system number one into action.
Very good, Your Highness. Watch out for the Mad Mountain. Citizens of Lilliput, leave the high road, take your horses and carts into your yards, leave the public squares. The Mad Mountain is coming.
You can go now, sir. Our herald has cleared the way. But watch out.
I know what precautions I must take. Would you like to come with me on my shoulders, Admiral?
Oh, no, thank you very much indeed. In any case, you're being watched very closely. The Lord High Commissioner for Home Safety is already in your pocket.
Oh, Lord High Commissioner, don't hide yourself like that. Come and be my guide. Take me to the capital of Lilliput. My word, it is a beautiful town. Simple design, but very beautiful indeed. It's in the form of a square, and it has two main streets which divide it into four. Everybody is on the roofs of their houses or in their attics. There's a large crowd. There must be at least 500,000 people.
There are 503,476 registered citizens. Oh, good heavens. When I'm on your shoulder, I'm higher than the roof of the Royal Academy. The rector of the Academy will be very annoyed when he hears this.
So the tallest building is the Royal Academy. Learning is very much respected in this country, I see. But at the crossroads, there's an even larger building. It comes almost up to my chin.
That's the Royal Palace.
I must have a look at that. What a wonderful, ornate building. What a luxurious place. Crimson velvet armchairs, gold hangings. There's a throne studded with marvelous stones. The king is there, but what's going on? Is there a circus in the throne room?
Oh, that is not a circus, sir.
But I can see tightrope walkers performing on a rope that's stretched on the ground.
Those are not tightrope walkers, sir. Those are ministers.
Ministers?
Oh, yes, sir. In our country, anyone who is aiming at an important post learns how to walk a tightrope when he's very young. When a post is vacant, five or six candidates perform on the rope, and the one who jumps the highest obtains the post.
But I've seen some of them fall two or three times, and they're going back to try again.
Ah, they want to show the king just how skillful they are, because there's going to be a war with Blefuscu soon, and each one wants to command the army.
That's very strange. But who are the people eating hard-boiled eggs? Are they ministers as well?
They're special ministers. They're practicing eating eggs by the small end in order to teach people how to do it later.
What?
Eggs are terrible things. Six revolts, peasant revolts, treachery, civil strife.
Revolts, civil strife? But what about?
Eggs, of course. People used to eat them by breaking them at the big end first. But the present king's father once cut his finger doing this when he was a boy. Thereupon, his father, the emperor, gave the order that his subjects should break their eggs at the little end from that day onwards.
Ah, I see.
But the people didn't understand the reason for this very well. And there were plots and counterplots, and a number of people went into exile in Blefuscu.
But is that serious?
Serious? Our spies have told us that the exiles have formed a huge fleet to come and besiege Lilliput. We are desperately in need of your help.
Now I understand why I've been set free. It will be my duty to defend the king of this country. It will be my duty to defend the king of this country against invaders.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have here a special authorization from His Majesty to relate to you the exploits of our guest, the Man Mountain, who has just set out all alone to fight against the Blefuscudian fleet in its own home port. I have taken up a position on a small hill just outside Lilliput, and with a pair of powerful binoculars, I can just see the Blefuscudian port quite easily. It's about 150 glumfumps from here. A few yards, according to our guest. I can see him now. He's swimming towards Blefuscu. He's within the shooting range of the Blefuscudian fleet. He's not taking the trouble to shield himself. He's going straight on. The enemy sailors have seen him. What are they going to do? Oh, they've launched a fierce salvo of arrows against him. This is terrible, terrible, terrible. Our Man Mountain's going to be killed. But no, 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 he's just coming into port. He's getting out of the water. He's three times as tall as the biggest of their three masters. All the enemy sailors are in flight now. They're leaving their ships and heading for shore. Ladies and gentlemen, they have abandoned their ships. The Blefuscudian fleet is ours. But how's he going to take the ships? I can't see very well. Just a minute. That's better. I can see the Man Mountain. He's tying all the ropes together on the prows of the ships. Oh, this is terrible. My friends, this is terrible. The enemy sailors have formed up again on the shore. They fired another murderous salvo of arrows at him. Can the Man Mountain's courage last out? He's cut all the mooring ropes now. And, ladies and gentlemen, this is sensational. Hooray! 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 Ah, Man Mountain's pulling all the boats behind him. Citizens of Lilliput, you can be proud of our guest today. He's bringing the enemy's bastions of the sea to our own country.
Shown yourself worthy of our people. I hereby appoint you to the post of Grand Nardac in my kingdom. Together we shall accomplish many things.
I am your Majesty's most humble servant.
Our superiority over Blefuscu is no longer in doubt. We will force this troublesome, treacherous people to give in. And all my subjects, both in Lilliput and Blefuscu, will break their eggs at the little end.
Your Majesty, I deeply regret to inform you that I shall never take part in forcing a free people into such slavery. This refusal on my part aroused the king's anger against me. The king's counselors, too, were angry at the thought of losing all the important positions in the enemy country. A plot was quickly hatched, and Bolgolam was its instigator.
It's treachery pure and simple. The Man Mountain is plotting against us with the Blefuscudians.
He must have the supreme punishment.
Don't let's act hastily, gentlemen. Bolgolam is perhaps a little jealous because the Man Mountain captured the enemy fleet without coming for help and advice.
I am not in the least bit jealous, but I have learned from a reliable source that we have been betrayed.
Yes, the conversations he had with the delegates from Blefuscu who came to discuss peace are proof enough.
And don't forget he refused to carry on a war with the Blefuscudians.
Death to the traitor!
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 Fortunately, I had become friendly with Red Riesel, Minister of Foreign Affairs. And he, at the peril of his life, came to warn me of decisions that had been taken at this secret meeting of the Great Council. He earnestly entreated me to flee, and I did so immediately. I went as quickly as I could to Blefuscu and asked for asylum there. The King of Blefuscu welcomed me in the kindest possible way.
Welcome, dear sir, welcome. You struck a terrible blow against us when you destroyed our fleet, but you have obviously understood that it is better to be our ally than our enemy. Together we shall accomplish many things. We shall take our revenge on Lilliput, and all my subjects in Lilliput and Blefuscu shall break their eggs at the big end.
I was caught in a trap. I didn't want to be instrumental in creating unhappiness in either of these kingdoms, so I began to consider the problem of how to get back to my own country. I had a stroke of luck. One day I was walking along the coast, and I came across a small boat that had obviously been torn off a ship during a storm. And so, on the 24th of September, 1701, I set sail towards where I imagined Van Diemen's Land to be. Ah!
After I'd sailed 3 days without seeing any land or any vessel, I caught sight of a sail on the horizon. I waved as hard as I could in order to attract attention. The ship turned out to be one of His Majesty's fleet. I was saved. But what a size the sailors were that took me back on their ship to my own country.
Well, I hope you've had fun relaxing listening to those stories today. I've enjoyed listening to them with you. If you've got something you'd like to hear from us, or you've got something to share with us, you could leave us a message. And he rummages around in his bag. Yes, and the number is 87-88-710. Give us a call, say hi. You'd have to leave a message and say hi. It'd be great to hear from you. I'll leave you with a song, Puff the Magic Dragon. You have a great week. Enjoy whatever you do. And don't forget, be kind to another. Ta-ra for now.
In a land called Honolulu, little Jackie Paper loved that rascal Puff and brought him strings and sealing wax and other fancy stuff. Oh, Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honolulu. The magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honolulu. Together they would travel on a boat with billowed sail. Jackie kept a lookout perched on Puff's gigantic tail. Noble kings and princes when Puff roared out his name. Oh, Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honolulu. Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honolulu. Dragon lives forever, but not so little boys. Painted wings and giant's rings make way for other toys. One gray night it happened, Jackie Paper came no more. And Puff that mighty dragon, he ceased his fearless roar. His head was bent in sorrow, scales fell like rain. Puff no longer went to play along the cherry lane. Without his lifelong friend, Puff could not be brave. So Puff, that mighty dragon, sadly slipped into his cave. Oh, Puff, the magic dragon, lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honolulu. Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honolulu.
This show was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kanepes, Hawke's Bay's community access radio station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for enabling us to put Hawke's Bay voices on air.